Welcome to Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
Happy coming out day, sisters.
Thanks, sister.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We all did that. We came out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go that's us. Our
we already did that, but still, happy day.
I never did on the podcast.
Oh, do you want to right now?
Well, now I feel pressure. Now it feels weird.
Hey, you don't have to if you don't feel. Yeah, there's no pressure.
I'm kidding. I'm bisexual.
Yay!
I did it. Yay!
Welcome.
I did it on Twitter.
Welcome to the club.
And Instagram.
It's a pretty cool club.
Thanks. I like it here.
It's getting bigger every day. You just joined.
Yeah. So many people.
Yeah, I love it.
That's an exciting day. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that if you haven't come out and you are thinking about it, that you have to.
It doesn't mean that's the one day of the year that you can. Yeah. Right. It's like, oh, I missed it. I got to wait a whole year.
I wait a whole 364 days.
I'm going to stay in this horrible straight closet.
I have to pretend to be straight again.
Oh, and next year's a leap year, a whole other day.
Oh, my gosh.
No, come out whenever you feel comfortable. Yeah.
Yes. No, it is. It's a great day for it because we named it that day. But any day. Well, I don't know. Somebody
did it. I don't know.
We personally did not. I don't think we can take credit for that.
No,
I don't get to. How do you get to name days?
I think sometimes, and not this one and not the other like important ones, but those ones, it's like National Ice Cream Day, National French Fry Day. Mm. Like, who?
You think that's like big ice cream?
It's
and
big ice cream.
Fries.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Who's making bank off of National Talk Like a Pirate Day? Because everybody likes to remind me of that one. I feel like I get more Facebook people
I get a lot
like, arg, it's Talk Like a Pirate. And I'm like, who? Okay.
You know the big pirate money. That big pirate lobbyist. The big pirate lobby in the White House. Just pirate propaganda.
Do you know where it is?
Oh, no.
Arby's.
What?
Like Arby's. They have all the talk like a pirate money because then...
Arby's is tied up in that?
Yeah.
That was such... Like... That was a weird evolution of a dad joke. You know where the big pirate money comes from.
And I hate it most because it's definitely a joke our dad would make.
It does sound like a joke specifically our dad would make because dad will like find a punchline and then try to back into a joke.
Yep. That was exactly what that was.
That's my sense of humor.
The second thought in my head was, oh, that's a bad pun. The first thought was, no, that's clearly cowboys. That's big cowboy money. What are you talking about? All right. There's not cowboy money.
Wait. Is that why Arby's has that hat? Are they supposed to be a cowboy restaurant?
It's a 10-gallon hat. Of course it is.
I've never associated Arby's with cowboys.
It's right there on their sign. They got the old timey Western writing and the hat and beef. I don't know.
Sydney, what big lobby industry do you associate Arby's with?
I mean, meat, right? Like meat.
Well, yeah, definitely meat, but also cowboys.
And also pirates.
No, it doesn't line up with
Arby's.
Pirates have to be.
You get it?
Long John Silver's, right?
Yes.
No,
that's where pirates eat sandwiches.
That's the Fisher lobby. Fisher people lobby.
Do you think pirates? Fishers? Do you think fishers? That's what they're called. Fishers. You know,
right?
Fishers.
I don't know where to go with this.
Well, I don't like the term fisherman because that's very like, you know,
that's
binary.
Gendered. Fisher people.
And gendered. That's why I said fisher people.
No, you said fishers.
And then I said fisher people. I thought about it.
Fisher thems.
Happy National Coming Out Day. Fisher thems.
Fisher thems. Oh, I was trying to think of another one. Where that joke went nowhere.
No, you would never know that you grew up in West Virginia. You know, fishers.
I
We are landlocked.
What with the poles and the...
I'm not a big fish girl, okay?
Oh, no. We didn't do enough of that outdoorsy stuff here.
Any of that outdoorsy stuff.
There's a lot of it there, wilderness. But we just hid from it.
Listen, I rafted once.
At least I'm not like that woman that made the bad jokes about West Virginia.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
You didn't see that? Either of you see what? That?
No.
This happened in the news. It was some comedian. I had never heard of her before. She was on the James Corden show. And guess she's from West Virginia, but was like the anti-Jennifer Gardner and made some like bad, unfunny jokes about West Virginia.
Aww. I don't like that.
Yeah. Made me sad.
We're trying, y'all. I mean...
Y'all? Doing our best, y'all.
I think that the worst thing you can do if you're from a state that suffers from, like, vast, like, economic, like, depression is make fun of it so nobody goes there.
Yeah, because we do... If you're a fisher, you can fish here.
Shut up!
There's fishering. There's mountaining. There is in the water. I don't do outdoor things.
Stop eating.
Sleep on the ground.
That's true.
There sleep is in a tree.
Climb.
Climb. Would you like to do the activity? Climb.
It's all there for your to get wet and dirty.
Would you like to do a raft?
Float and paddle fast. It's
that's the limit of my outdoors activity. I like, what is it when you fly through the zip line? Okay, zip line. Oh, yeah. That's the real word. I knew that one.
We should be the new heads of tourism for West Virginia.
I know.
We're really good at this, guys.
Fisher, climb, sleep on ground,
go in a big hole.
We got those.
We got lots of big holes.
See, I know the term spelunking because the first time I heard it, I went, hee hee, that's a silly word. And I never forgot it.
Hey, listen, we've got pepperoni and we've got rolls and we put them together.
Yeah, we more?
Did. Come on down. That was the commercial.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great weekend, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Pepperoni and rolls.
Well,
ground.
There you go.
That's West Virginia. Oh no.
I didn't leave, so you know.
I'm still here.
Yeah. Taylor, we're looking
Taylor.
At you.
Taylor.
Oh, okay. Look, I just made it clear that I have a vast fear and no knowledge of the outdoors. I am in the land that is paved.
West Virginia is a scary place for people like Taylor and I that do not and know, we know nothing of the outdoors.
It's also quiet, and then I'm alone with my thoughts, but in the big city, it's always loud, so you don't have to think as much.
West Virginia, alone with your thoughts.
In the dark. Let's and it's the
home.
Real dark.
Country roads. Anyway, we hope...
Let's go home, country roads. Those aren't the words.
I don't know the words to that song.
We hope that if you are coming out or came out or going to come out or... I mean, if you're straight, that's fine, too. You know. I mean, it's okay.
It
you
is. Know.
Totally. Yes. It was just so...
Oh, that's fine.
That's fine.
So everybody's fine. That's great. It's all fine here at Still Buffering. When we hope you're having a great day, celebrating or not. That speaking of days,
God, this is things, one. We are in
this
one
is a
right
day.
Now.
Yesterday was another awareness day.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health, worldwide. Mental health world. Is that right?
Wide,
so
yes.
Was today National Coming Out Day?
Yes.
And yesterday was World
Mental Health Day. Yes.
Okay.
At least based off of the hashtags I saw trending.
Twitter might make these things
Twitter
up.
Twitter might,
know.
You know?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they're not bad ideas. I'm not saying that in a derogatory way.
It's like how Valentine's Day is like a Hallmark holiday.
Right.
You've got all these days that Twitter's just like, here's a hashtag.
Well, some of them, it would be weird without the presence of the internet. Like, can you imagine like national like quesadilla day without the internet, where you're just like, it's that day, we gotta like, what, why are you What? Quesadillas?
Why do you have so many quesadillas?
What is that? What is it? It's largely online holidays.
Yeah.
Which, again, is fine. I like quesadillas. Yeah. We could have that. When is that day?
I don't actually know if that's a real
one. You know it is one.
Hold on. I was just being obtuse.
Give me 10 seconds on the internet.
it's got to be one. The quesadilla lobby has got to have claimed a day by now. Yesterday was Mental Health Awareness Day.
It's September 25th.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you.
We missed it. We missed
quesadilla by like 2 weeks.
I'm upset that didn't trend. Well, all right.
All right. Well, next year we'll hit quesadilla day. This year we all took a moment yesterday, and hopefully you did too, to kind of reflect on, think about, talk about mental health and how the more we're open about it and discuss it, the more we recognize it as part of, you know, health,
mm-hmm.
like all health, the more help people with mental illness can get.
And see, I think that this podcast has been meta for the last 10 minutes, because something that I do when I want to avoid talking about my mental health is focus on comedy and jokes.
Well,
so that's why Arby's has been discussed.
Yeah.
For longer than Arby's rightfully should.
Have you ever wondered where the first 10 to 13 minutes of Still Buffering comes from every week? It's out of avoidance of discussing real issues.
Yes.
Looking
exactly.
for humor.
Yes.
We've never talked about that explicitly. I think we've all peripherally kind of, you know, referenced it mm-hmm. on the show.
We talked about stress and self-care and mm-hmm. all those kinds of things.
And I have discussed some of my issues with postpartum depression on other podcasts. I'm not plugging them, mm-hmm. saying that I have. But I don't think on Still Buffering we've ever explicitly talked about the importance of thinking about your mental health and like doing those kind of self checks. How am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
And then getting help when you need it, when yeah. you realize that there's a problem,
especially when you're growing up and you're, you know, going yes. through all the difficult times.
Yes. Cause as we did mention on the stress episode, I know when Taylor and I were younger, there was a lot of there was this impression that you couldn't have problems when you were a teenager, like real problems, mm-hmm. cause you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what's your deal? You're fine. Oh, school's hard. Wah. I mean, like yeah. that was really the impression I got as a kid. I think it's certainly different now.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that I know the statistics on college campuses aren't great, that we mm-hmm. have a lot of undiagnosed and untreated mental illness on college campuses. And they didn't, all these college students didn't just start having problems yeah. in college.
Right.
You yeah. know? So how much are we missing in the teen years?
Yeah. I know in my scholarship program at school, you know, we're all honor students, and there's a lot of statistics about, you know, high achieving and honor students throughout high school and college having higher rates of anxiety and depression and mental illness in general, just because of, you know, pressures and expectations and things like that. And we all had a meeting at the end of last year, and we were like, hey, you know what would be helpful for all of us honor students is maybe like an in-house free counselor that we could see that's just for us, because some of us don't have like the financial resources or the time to go see someone outside of school, and that would be really helpful. So now, starting this semester at my school, we have an in-house counselor twice a week in our honors college for all of our honors students, which is super cool. We also have counselors and residents in all of the dorm buildings and a counseling center that is free. So my college, at least, is very helpful to students.
That's good.
Who need some mental health resources, which is very nice.
I don't feel like we had, certainly not in college, I don't remember anything like that. And in high school, I can't imagine going to my counselor. Nothing against my counselor in high school. I just don't feel like that's what
yeah.
high school counselors were for. Right? I mean, Taylor, did you ever feel like I felt like my counselor was there for like, how do I apply for a scholarship?
Right.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because I think when we were growing up, I feel like it's only recently that we more often have the conversation around like how stigmatized mental illness is, because I feel like growing up, you know, I definitely suffered from a lot of anxiety and a lot of depression, but you don't want to ever, like, it felt so taboo to consider those things. Like, I have this
this thing that you should feel bad if you have. So no, you look for external reasons that that's happening in your life, you know? Like, it's not something in me. It's something I just need to fix about my life. I need to be better at this, or I need to be better at that, or if I could get this, then I would feel better. It's like, the last thing you consider is, maybe I just need to talk to somebody. Maybe I have a mental illness. Maybe I have some issues I need to work through.
And it's hard, because part of what you just talked about is important for people to do. I mean, part of, I know in my experience that sometimes the problem isn't depression or anxiety. It is something in your life. Like, sometimes right. That is true. So I think, like, doing those checks on yourself, being self-aware and having that insight is really important, because sometimes I know I will counsel somebody like, you know, I think everything you're saying keeps coming back to this one situation in your life. And it feels like all the therapy or medication or anything in the world isn't going to fix that external thing. And so sometimes that is true. I think in the teen years, it's also true that, I mean, I know I went through like teen normal moodiness that was not depression, but I definitely, I think, like, if you were an adult who cared but didn't know what was going on in my brain, would have looked at me walking around. I mean, I dressed completely in black. Mm-hmm. I hid in my room all the time. I had no friends. I was withdrawn, and I wrote really sad poems. And I think that an adult, a caring adult, may have easily said, I think you need help. Mm-hmm. Right. When I didn't need help, I was just... It was just the thing I was doing. It was the persona I tried on for a while. It didn't fit. I tried something else. So I think all that makes it even harder to tease out in the teen years.
Right.
Who needs help and who just needs like normal love and support in this moment in their life, you know?
Yeah. And there's a big difference between being goth and being depressed. It's like, you know, on a good day, like when I'm in a good spot, I'll show up at work and I'll like I'm wearing all black and I've got my spikes and my accessories and I look great. When I'm going through, like when I'm having a period of like, oh, I'm going through a depressive episode, that's when I don't look goth. That's when I'm like, I've been wearing this t-shirt for 3 days. I sprayed it with perfume so you won't smell it. You can just smell it underneath the perfume. Like, you know, like it's like, that's when my makeup is not a death pallor. And like, that's when you know.
Well, but I think what you're talking about, I think that's a good point though. Like, I think that as adults looking at teenagers, you feel like the generation like after you, it's so inaccessible and you have no idea what is cool or not cool or trendy that it can be really hard to tell what's going on from the outside.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and I think that definitely you're right. A lot of stuff was dismissed when we were younger.
Yeah.
As like, oh, you know, teens, hormones, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just need to get out and socialize more.
Exactly. Go hang out with your friends.
It's not
get outside.
It's the crippling fear of other people that's keeping me inside. But yeah, you're right. I should go talk to them.
Yeah.
Right. No, and I think you're right. I think a lot of it is. And a lot of it is like, if you would, I remember feeling the pressure, not really from our parents. I won't blame this on my parents. I felt pressure more from just like everything.
Yeah.
Society.
Yeah.
To like be a quote unquote normal teen. Mm-hmm. And then I would feel better. Like, just be a normal teen. Go to parties.
Yeah.
Go have fun at a football game.
Yeah.
You know, break the rules a little and then you'll be happy. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know if that's changed. Like, those were the messages I remember getting. Like, and then everyone will be happy and there won't be depression. And like, it totally negates the idea that like, well, yeah, no, there are teenagers who are suffering from mental illness.
Yeah. Yeah. And they can look like everybody. They are just as likely to be the, you know, the whatever cliche athlete, cheerleader, I mean, you know, as they are the kid all in black.
Yeah. Right, right.
I mean, I think that the general message, while that idea still exists probably in a pretty large number, I think the general message of like acceptance and recognition of mental health and mental illness has gotten better amongst like adults. And I think a lot of that is because the adults now are like your all's generation of people who are like, hey, this is what mental health was treated as when we were growing up, and we don't want our kids to feel that way or our younger siblings to feel that way, so we're going to change that conversation. But I mean, I think as a teenager, especially throughout high school, I still felt that way. Like I went to the football games and I had the parties and, you know, did all the extracurricular things, school dances and all that kind of stuff. But I still felt like super depressed and anxious all the time. And I guess I just thought like, this is just normal. Everyone feels this way. This is just like what it feels like to be a teenager, I guess. Mm-hmm. So this is fine. And then it took me going to college and still feeling that way almost out of my teen years as like an adult, being around other people who are like, no, that's not normal. It's not how people feel all the time. Maybe you should go talk to someone, for me to be like, oh, okay. And I think it's just almost like an internalized feeling of you can still recognize that mental health exists or mental illness exists and recognize it in other people, but recognizing it in yourself and having the like ability and self-awareness to be able to like take that step to go talk about it with someone is a lot different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do want to like compliment just what you said, like recognizing other people, like even that I think is that's an evolution of your generation, because
yeah,
that's one, and Sid, maybe you get this, but like that's one weird divide that I found in my adult life, is that I feel like when the conversation became more normalized, largely by younger people, it felt like such a relief to me that I could mm-hmm. talk openly about it. But one thing I did realize is that other people that are in my age group that don't suffer from any sort of mental illness, it's still like it, that doesn't make them suddenly accept me. Like, you know, I had a close friend, like somebody that I always hid things from, specifically because I knew they would, that was just something they didn't want. That was a part of me that they just, it was better if I just kept that away from them. And it was a situation where I was having an anxiety attack, and it was just like, it was one of the worst experiences of my life, having someone who I trust be like, this is why I don't want to be around you. You're nothing but a burden. Like, look at you right now. And it's like, that lack of understanding. Whereas I would hope that even people that don't suffer would, you know, younger people being able to say like, this is what you're going through. And we mm-hmm. have the language and we have the understanding that this is just like if somebody has an allergy or a disease or something, this is just something that's part of you and it comes mm-hmm. with you. It's not something that I need you to work out of your system in order to be in my life.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely had less than ideal conversations with people around my age where I talk about having anxiety. And sometimes there's that really crappy feeling where people are like, oh, everyone has anxiety. Everyone gets anxious about things. Everyone has anxiety attacks. That's not like, you know, mm-hmm. that's not a mental illness. Everyone feels that way. It's like, well, no, that's not how that works. And if you could feel the things I feel, I would assure you, you would know this is not how your brain works. But I remember I moved in with my roommates, and the first time I had what I can now recognize as an anxiety attack in front of them, there was never any like avoidance of me or feeling like I was being like imposing on them by being upset in that moment. It was very like, oh, okay, I understand. Is there anything I can do to help you? If not, totally cool. If there is, just let me know and we can talk about it. And also like, hey, this is a mental illness I have, and hey, this is something I experience, and like a very just like easy conversation that was just very like, okay, that's cool, this is something you experienced, let me know how I can help.
Yeah. I can't imagine any of that even back when I was in college. I try to fathom that situation happening with even my closest friends in college.
Yeah. And
it would have been, I mean, I'm not saying they wouldn't have been supportive. Maybe they would have been great. I don't know. But it was never anything any of us talked about.
Right.
It wasn't, it's not even like I don't have a frame of reference for that.
Yeah.
Because nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, when I was in college, we've talked about this before and we talked about this earlier, but like, you know, I was suffering from a horrible eating disorder that was very evident. It was evident in my behavior and everything. And it wasn't something where anybody, it was just that made you almost like stop existing. Mm-hmm. It's like, just nobody talks to that person. Mm-hmm. Like that's just, it's, you know, it was so stigmatized that it just felt like you just become a non-person because you have this thing. Or mm-hmm. that's what it felt like.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. And I think the only thing I can think about, like when I look back, I know we did that with people who had addiction issues, mm. who had, you know, substance use
yeah.
disorder. I remember like, the idea that you would confront somebody and saying like, you know, I know you're not like flunking or driving drunk or something, but like, I'm a little worried. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Those conversations just weren't commonplace.
Yeah.
Those were things you said in hushed tones when someone wasn't around.
Right.
Like, oh, well, you know what they are like. And that's.
No, it was not something you would say like, hey, can I help you?
Yeah. It's funny, like, talking about coming out day, because in some way it's a weird parallel in my life. Like, it's the same feeling of like, that's, it's not something to be ashamed. It's just part of who I am.
Yeah.
It's just part of my DNA. I can't keep that away from you. I can't hide it. It's not unsavory. It's just me. And it's as much me as any other part that you like.
It has no morality. It just is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to talk about this more, but we have to take a quick break before I do that. And
check the group message. Thought you weren't going to let me say it.
No, I was going to let you say it.
I'll always
let you say it. hey, sisters. This fall, it's time for some 70s throwback looks.
Whoa.
How does that sound?
That sounds like my closet.
I love it. That's that's before my time, but I'll allow it. Where apparently the 90s are over, the 70s are back. Mm-hmm. As are spooky Halloween chic outfits and cozy coats, and you can find them all at ModCloth. I love ModCloth.
Me too.
I shopped at ModCloth long before I started talking about it on this podcast. They design vintage-inspired pieces made relevant for the right now. And you can find, I mean, everything, like if you need fancy dresses for going out, or you want cool casual clothes to hang out in, mm-hmm. or like business looks for work, whatever you're looking for, they've got everything. They've got cool stuff for your room and accessories and shoes and all kinds of stuff. And they include a size range from 00 to 28. If you've got a question about fit, their team of mod stylists can hook you up with complimentary sizing and styling help. I can't recommend it highly enough. Check out ModCloth. They've got all kinds of new fall fashions. Mm-hmm. Get yourself some cute sweaters and cardigans.
I just got a very good suede velvety black dress that I'm wearing to a fancy event. And ooh. Also like a maroon and beige plaid skirt that is wool. Very good for the fall and winter months.
Very lots nice. I always check out their graphic tees. I know that's not a fall thing, but
they have a very good sweater also that has a little collar that has little bats on the ends of the collar.
Ooh,
it's very cute, very spooky.
So that's what I love. Like their Halloween section is great for me for the rest of the year. Yeah. So now is the time.
So Taylor, if our listeners want to check out ModCloth, what should they do?
Well, you should hurry because this offer is only valid for a limited time. But you can get 15% off your purchase of $100 or more, including all sale items, if you go to modcloth.com and enter code BUFFERING at checkout. That is modcloth.com. Use code BUFFERING, get that 15% off at checkout, and including sale items through the end of October.
Sisters, I want to talk to you about something else.
Okay.
Okay, and do that's it. Native deodorant. This week's Still Buffering is brought to you in part by Native Deodorant. And less is more with Native. They have fewer, simpler ingredients, so you know everything that's in your deodorant. Everything going in your pits, as I like to say.
Or axilla, whatever. You know.
It's your pits.
That sounds like an alien race. Does. I like pits better.
Thank you. It comes in a wide variety of enticing scents for all people, and they release new limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year. They also have unscented formula and baking soda free formula for those with sensitivities. I really like the vanilla and coconut. That's usually my go-to. Smells very like beachy and tropical, even in the colder months. And they offer free returns and exchanges in the USA. So, you know, you can give it back. You can exchange it for another flavor, another scent, whatever you like. And it's all free because Native cares about you. And so do we. So, Taylor, if our listeners want to check out Native, where should they go?
They should go to nativedeodorant.com, and you can get 20% off your first purchase if you use promo code BUFFERING during checkout.
So check that out.
Yeah.
And have pits that smell great.
Yeah.
And seasonal.
And seasonal.
I love that idea.
Seasonal pits. Spooky pits, jolly pits.
Whatever.
Summer pits.
All the pits. One thing I found as I got older and progressed through my particular line of education. And I've thought about this, like, is this more of a unique experience to my profession? But I imagine there are a lot of other professions that would echo this sentiment. So I don't think it's probably that unique. But I know in medicine, as I progressed from college to med school, the idea, even though we are trained, and I think for the most part believe, mm-hmm. At least I know I do, and I think most of my colleagues do, I mm-hmm. hope, that mental illness is part of, it's just another type of illness, just like any other illness you have. You should treat depression just like you treat diabetes. Neither are something you can will away mm-hmm. or, you know, go. I always see those memes on Facebook, like, just go, like, inhale some fresh air and look at yeah. a tree and then your depression will go away or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I wish it were that simple.
I love that because I then like to make the point of, like, you know what? Running does help my depression, but it triggers my anxiety. So have fun with that.
That's a puzzle for all of you to figure out.
Yeah. I have to figure it out every day I'm alive.
Well, and I'd like to think that most of us in medicine, like, get that. I think that's true. And so treat it like that. Mm-hmm. But even as we're being taught that and we are learning that and believe that and act on it and tell our patients with complete earnestness that this is the case. Let me help you. Here are some referrals. Here are some medicines. Here are some things you can do. Let's work on it together. At the same time, the idea that a physician or a medical student mm-hmm. would admit to that, at least when I was coming up through the ranks, was very taboo.
Yeah.
And was very concerning for how it would affect your professional career if you received actual help,
yeah.
like real deal, went to a doctor for mental illness, not just like meditated.
Yeah.
I mean, like went and were put on a medication yeah. or went to therapy or something like that. It was very scary. And there's tons of stigma, I think, still
yeah,
against receiving that treatment yourself, which is very, it's really tough. And I know that in the medical field, untreated mental illness and suicidal ideation and you know, actual taking your own life has been a big problem within our community mm-hmm. because it's not being addressed. It's often labeled physician burnout. Mm. And so the key, like the treatments, so to speak, for it are like, we'll give you coupons for like a dinner out or like a massage or like,
yeah,
some like a wellness thing.
Yeah.
Like, here's some wellness.
Yeah.
to treat your depression.
Yeah.
which doesn't work. And like, it's been a big problem. And I remember feeling that very much. I remember counseling younger residents when I was one of the chief residents that in medicine, I feel like you hit a point which we dubbed the crying times. Mm-hmm.
That's all my times.
And it's...
Aw.
Riley.
That was a joke. That's a joke.
It's... hey, humor helps mask the pain.
Exactly.
That's why we do this.
That's why we got funny. Yeah.
But really, I remember saying there was a point in time where I was, like, falling apart every day, crying my mm-hmm. way through every day. And I would call Justin every time I got a break at the hospital and say, look up something I can do with my degree other than be a doctor, because I'm so miserable. And if I have to do this with the rest of my life, I don't know how I can face it. Mm-hmm. Now, that passed. And it yeah, does, I think, right. for most people in medicine. But what we were calling the crying times.
Yeah.
And saying is just a time where, like, reach out, talk to your colleagues, ask for support, let us know we're here. You can call me and cry to me. Mm-hmm. Come over to my house. I'll make you dinner. You know, like, we'll yeah. get through this together. It, for some people, it's really challenging. And it is a setup for, you know, a major depressive episode yeah. or severe right. uncontrolled anxiety. If you are already experiencing those things and then you're put into a situation like medical yeah. school or residency or being a physician. And I think for a lot of us, it's not being managed at all or yeah. talked about enough even. Yeah.
I mean, I think on a smaller scale, it goes back to something I think we've talked about a little bit. We talked about self-care and mm-hmm. stress. But when you're in like a highly competitive environment like that, I mean, even like college, when you're surrounded by other students who are trying to get the highest grades and extracurriculars and everything, there's almost like a romanticizing of poor mental health to a certain extent.
Uh-huh.
And it's never like for people who are upfront and honest and say like, no, I actually have anxiety and depression. For right. more for people who are like, yeah, I have mental breakdowns every day, or I yeah. stay up all night because I'm feeling so anxious, or just had an anxiety attack about this, or I'm feeling so depressed, I haven't left my dorm in a week. And the whole idea of like taking poor care of yourself is something to achieve, and that means like you're doing better or you're being more successful, I guess. And it's the same thing. Like for some people, that's a period like around finals or midterms. There's always like, oh, this is when all college students are not showering and not eating and you know, staying up all night studying and doing homework. For some people, it is just that it's a, you know, week or two of the year where they feel really bad and everything is stressful.
That's all of residency. That's yeah. all. That's what they expect of you, is that for the entirety of residency, you aren't sleeping, you aren't eating,
yeah.
you aren't peeing when you want to.
But
you
I
never
mean,
exercise, you feel miserable, yeah. and you, I mean, it's glamorized on TV.
Yeah.
Like you go, you do your shift, you barely make it through, and then you go get drunk to forget about
right.
it. I'm not saying everybody does yeah. that, but that's what TV right. shows yeah. make it look like.
But I mean, yeah, like you said, for some people, it's actually mental illness, and that's not, you know, not taking care of yourself makes that worse. And mm-hmm. thinking it's the ideal thing to do, it makes you smarter, makes you more successful, isn't good for that. And I think that's a big part of the reason why I didn't acknowledge that I had actual mental illness for a long time, was just because I thought that was like what was expected of me, was like, oh, you feel super anxious all the time and you feel depressed because you don't have time to do anything you enjoy, and you are constantly doing things that you feel like will get you somewhere better in the future, but you don't even know like when that'll be or where that'll be and if that'll ever happen. I guess I thought that was normal. And then I thought waking up and feeling like tightness in your chest because of all the things you had to do, and going to bed with tightness in your chest at the end of the day because of all the things you still had to do or the things you did that day that still weren't good enough. Like, I thought all of that was just like, this is what it's like to be a college student or whatever. And that's not the case. And that's not how you should have to feel. And yeah. it took me until just this year and going to therapy and talking about it and taking, you know, steps with my doctors to get on medications that help with that, to realize that you don't have to live that way, and you can still be successful and take good care of your mental health. And in the long right. run, you'll be more successful if you can take care of your mental health.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, yeah. And that paralleling it with any other more physical disease, because mm-hmm. it can have physical effects on mm-hmm. you. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, is so important. I mean, cause that's like, I know I read this comment associated with Anthony Bourdain after his passing, mm-hmm. and somebody made the point of like, look, if somebody had battled cancer and lived until, you know, their late 50s battling cancer their whole life, we'd say, wow, what a hero, what mm-hmm. a champion, what a struggle. But then if somebody, you know, dies by suicide late in their life, it's oh, what a tragedy, what a loss. It's like, no. He fought his entire life to stay alive mm-hmm. and gave us so much. And mm-hmm. that is a triumph.
Yeah.
It would be a triumph in the face of any other more physical disease.
That's true.
It shouldn't be taken away from someone just because that happens to be the terminal illness that they had.
Right. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, this is something I've thought a lot about in the age of mass shootings and things like that. The whole conversation of mental illness is almost can be taken in the other end of the spectrum, like blaming it for things that maybe it right. has no place in, and using it as like a political tool to get support for anything other than things like gun control. And that does upset me a little bit, almost like the bad side of opening the discussion about mental health. It's like, oh, okay, you want to acknowledge that mental illness exists and that a lot of people suffer from mental illness. Let's use it against people who actually do suffer from mental illness then.
Well, I think the implication, too, is that it's just one thing.
Right.
Like,
oh, you're mentally ill. That means you are X. Like,
yeah.
it's not, you know, you have anxiety or you have depression or you have obsessive compulsive disorder or any number of other diagnoses that people can have. They're all different.
And it's worth pointing out in that conversation, and I think we may have said this before, that people with mental illness are more likely to be the victims of
not
violent crime as opposed to the perpetrators of violent crime.
Right.
So it's not,
there's no correlation.
It's a false argument to distract from the gun issue, which is the bigger issue.
Right.
But yeah, no, it's true. And it's very frustrating from my standpoint as somebody who was a family doctor. I provide a lot of care. I'm like the person who's helping to manage mental illness, in part because that is something that we can do. But then also in some areas, there isn't a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. or if there is one, it's going to take you months and months to get an appointment with them, and it'll be months before you can get a follow-up.
Right.
There's not enough therapists and psychologists and counselors. There aren't the resources. And it is so frustrating when I am trying so hard to like get somebody the help they need. I know it's frustrating for them more mm-hmm. so than me, but we recognize there's a problem. We can diagnose it. I'm trying to get the appropriate treatment. And you have politicians saying like, well, we just need to help more with mental illness in this country. Well, yeah, like, well then come on, help.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do
please.
It.
We need more resources. Yes. Let's stop talking about it. And let's put the money behind, the effort behind, the focus on this, just like we do all the other illnesses that are just as important. You know, we recognize that cancer is something we need to put more time and effort into researching and treating and finding cures for, you know, heart mm-hmm. disease and diabetes and everything else. Yes. And depression mm-hmm. and anxiety and schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and all these other illnesses. Let's put it all. Yes, mm-hmm. please.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I feel like we're definitely better mm-hmm. about it than we used to be. I mean, I think the more you can talk about these things openly, you know, like both of you have, mm-hmm. I think that's definitely helpful to share the idea, like, you're not alone. It's not something that you don't become depressed because you didn't try hard enough not to be depressed.
Right.
Right.
You don't become anxious because you're not working hard enough not to be anxious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it is, like you said, Tay, it's just your DNA. It's who you are.
And no, nobody wants to feel those ways.
No. Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's not a choice at all. There's no choice in it. It's the active thought, like even like in my darkest moments where it's like the weird awareness of like, I don't want this at all. But then mm-hmm. your brain's telling you something completely different. And it's just, it's torture. No one I guarantee if anyone had the tools to avoid that, they'd take them. And that's why I think those tools need to be made more readily available and not come with some stigma or shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
No, and I think it's one of those things that it is hard for people to understand if they've never experienced it, mm-hmm. Which makes it harder to like, I think the best route, because you can explain it all day long and it's still hard to.
Yeah.
Internalize. The best route is to like try to get people to understand that it is the same as we've all been sick before.
Right.
Everybody who's alive has been sick at some point in their life. Some of us with acute things, some of us with chronic things, some of us with both. And to try to just frame it as you've gotten a cold or the flu or a stomach bug or whatever, you have hypertension, you have diabetes, whatever mm-hmm. you have, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
You didn't ask for it. You didn't choose it. You can't control it. Without help.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just say like, well, I'm going to go look at a tree and it'll be gone.
Right. Yeah.
I'm going to do some yoga and drink some tea.
Yeah.
Yes. And it really, I mean, I didn't until after Charlie was born, it was really hard for me to understand how, like, I understood it in an abstract way, mm-hmm. like in a logical way. I believed it, mm-hmm. of course. Which you don't need to believe in something that's a fact, but I believed it. But until I experienced it, it is really hard to internalize. And here I was sitting there with my child in my arms who, yes, we went through a hard time. We spent a week in the NICU and it was very challenging, but we came home healthy, mm-hmm. alive, fine. You know, I should have been overjoyed. We wanted a kid for so long. It took me a while to get pregnant. I was finally able to. I have this child who seems to be absolutely perfect as far as I can tell. I have the means and resources to stay at home with her for a period of time after she was born. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to go immediately back to work. I was able to take a few weeks of maternity leave. My husband was there with me, who was able to help me and take a couple weeks of paternity leave. I had family and friends and everything somebody would need. And I felt absolutely, I mean, I didn't even have words for it. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was just a giant gaping empty hole in the middle of me. And the only emotion that I ever felt was anger or rage, and then nothing. Mm-hmm. And I would just sit there crying, looking at my perfect child, because then I would feel guilty that I didn't feel happy.
Right.
Looking at my perfect child.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that was the only thing I felt. And like, it was, and I didn't tell anybody when it was going on. I never talked about it. I never shared it. I didn't tell Justin because I felt embarrassed.
Right. I mean, right. I think that's one of the biggest sources of sort of like a cognitive dissonance for people who feel like they have a very like privileged life to be grateful for. Like I do. I mean, I'm very grateful for what I have. I recognize like the amount of privilege and opportunities I'm given in my life. But when you like, for example, I had a big exam like a week ago. And before the test, I was in a classroom, only 7 other people in the class with me, and we're all in the same program. We all know each other really well. They all know I have anxiety. That is something I've talked about with them very openly. And before the test, to them, it was just like, yeah, it's a test. It's stressful, but like, it's just a test. I was like up pacing around the room, trying to breathe, felt like I couldn't breathe, like trying to calm myself down before this test because I was so nervous and almost felt like I was going to pass out or throw up because I felt like I just couldn't sit still. And I felt, you know, irritated and anxious and irritable and all of those things. And it was one of the most like self-aware moments of my life where I was like, oh, all of these people know me and they are aware of the concept that I have talked about of anxiety, but they have never seen it in this way before. And they have never experienced it because, I mean, as far as I know, none of them also experience anxiety. And it was almost embarrassing. Like you say, like, yeah, I recognize I have mental illness and I want to be open about that and want to acknowledge it and accept it and work on it and not try to avoid it. But it's still hard in practice to not want to hide that part of yourself when you feel like it's a weird or abnormal or scary thing to other people.
Or a weakness. For
or
me.
A weakness.
That was the big thing for
yeah.
me.
Well, and this is hard for me to talk about, but I feel like it makes sense in the conversation. I you all know this, but I've never talked about it on the podcast. I struggle with self-harm. It's something that I've done since I was a teenager, and I have blamed so much on my poor, sweet, innocent cat that has never raised a claw to me. He has been blamed for so many
Jack.
Errant cuts. I know, it's not fair. And it's still one of those where it's like, you know, it's like, so much of it is hard to explain for me, but it just comes with so much stigma and so much like, oh, you do that for attention. It's like, well, then why do I hide it? Like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't like, it's suicidal. It's like, ah, it's not that. I don't know what it is, but it's a struggle. Mm-hmm. And it's something that there are better days. Like one of my first tattoos, I should say. Was to cover scars that I'd had from you know, when I was an early teen. And it was a very young thought when I was like 22, like, I'm gonna get this tattoo to cover these scars and I'm never gonna do it again. Ha. That was wishful thinking, but you know, it's being able to like recognize it. And I go to a therapist and talk about it, and just being able to talk about it and have someone say that like, not turn away, not speak to you in a hushed tone in response, has been so massive for me to help me deal with that, to make me mm-hmm. feel like it's not something that the fact that this exists alone, the fact that I do this alone makes me garbage. Like it empowers the action because it's like, well, if I do this, I'm a non-human anyway. So mm-hmm. it doesn't matter to try to fix it, to have somebody talk to you like a human in relation to something that is so hush hush. It's like, oh, it's not, it doesn't make me stop existing because I do this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say in a very meta way, as we end or near the end of this show, I think it is very cool and interesting and important that all three of us came from the same family in the same place and share the same genes but we all have very different experiences with mental health and mental illness and different ways to talk about it and different mental illnesses and diagnoses and ways of coping with it. I think that just shows that it's not a thing you choose. It's not a, you know, something that's based off of just one thing that's happened in your life. And it affects everyone in some way, whether it's directly or secondhand or through, you know, whatever way it might, it affects everyone. And it's something that while we talk about it more, I still don't think is talked about enough. And I'm glad that we are contributing to the positive conversation of being very open and honest about it. And I think that's really important.
And that's a good point. I think more people than not would have a dialogue around this mm-hmm. related to their own personal experiences. I mean, there's three of us and we all have experienced various forms of mental illness. I think it's way more normal. And that is such mm-hmm. An important realization to come to. You know, it's like, I feel alone, but I'm not alone in that feeling. Yeah. And that's in some mm-hmm. way empowering.
Yeah. That's why days like World Mental Health Day are so important, because sometimes you are in the middle of a depressive episode or an anxiety attack and you think, I am the only person in the world that has ever felt this bad. No one else has ever been this upset or this anxious or this worried or sad. But that's not true, because other people do all the time, and probably no one feels 100% comfortable being totally open and honest about all of their mm-hmm. you know, personal struggles. But the more we talk about them, the more it helps other people feel less alone. And then those people from where I've been talking about it. And then it's just like a little domino waterfall ripple effect.
Yeah. So we encourage you to check in with yourself first. I think that's the first step.
Yes.
Is to like take a second to check on yourself and say, how are you, self? How mm-hmm. are you today? How are you feeling? Are you really feeling that way? Mm-hmm. How are you feeling yeah. inside that you haven't said out loud, maybe?
Yeah.
And then if the answer to that question is, you know, not so great, like, talk to somebody. Yeah. And it can start mm-hmm. with just family or friends that you trust, people that you lean on, people that you can like bounce things off of and say, hey, I think I'm not okay. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you about it? And then, you know, from there, talk to a doctor, talk to a counselor, talk to a therapist, talk to a yeah. psychologist, talk to, you know, reach out. Primary care doctors, I'm not plugging us because I want business. I'm plugging us because if you have no idea where to go or where to start, a yep. primary care doctor is a great resource to ask. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that we do, and the stuff we don't, we usually know how to get you help
yeah.
for. So,
and I will say from personal experience, the idea of talking to because I've talked to a therapist for a while, but the idea of talking to a physician about mental health and, you know, medications for that and treatments for that was so terrifying to me, thinking like, oh, even though I recognize all illness is illness and medicine is medicine, the idea of talking to someone who has treated me in the past for like stomach bugs and colds and things right. like that to about this, I just expected the conversation to be like, oh no, just keep going to therapy, keep doing what you're doing, like, you know, yeah. you'll be fine. But I had the best experience, just very like, this is how I'm feeling and this is how I feel always and this is what I've been trying to do and this is what's helping, this is what's not, and got a very like clear logical answer and help from my doctor. So, you know, it seems very, very scary and intimidating, but I promise that it is for the most part and probably almost all of the time a lot easier than it seems.
Yeah. And if you've been someone that has had people not understand, turn away from you, judge you, treat you poorly because you've tried to be honest or because of what you deal with, I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. And secondly, you don't deserve that.
Yeah.
And that is a failure of understanding on their part.
Yeah.
Nothing else. And you deserve to have people that understand mm-hmm. you and listen to you and see all of you in your life.
And we are all here for you. If you feel like you don't have any of those people maybe right now, we are all here for you. And we love you and we care about you. And we are rooting for you always.
So I guess for coming out day, since we've all already come out as not straight.
We're coming out as yeah. mentally ill.
I know. I was going to say, I told you last year I was bi, so that's like old news.
Old news.
That's old news. So I guess I'm coming out as I had postpartum depression. I don't still have it because I'm doing okay right now. Mm. I'm not on any treatment currently. I didn't get help. not because I didn't need it, but because I was arrogant and I didn't want to look weak and I didn't want anybody to think I didn't love my kid. Mm. And those were bad reasons because obviously I did love my kid and nobody would have thought that.
Yeah.
But I suffered and struggled for a long time. Yeah. And I'm doing fine now, but I really wish I could go back and tell myself, like, hey, why don't you tell anybody, literally anybody, how you're feeling mm-hmm. and get some help? Because life doesn't have to be this hard.
Yeah.
So that's my coming out.
Yeah.
I love you, Sid, and I'm sorry I love that you struggled too. With that alone.
Yeah. Oh, well, I love you too. It's okay. I should have known. I went to school for this stuff. I don't know if you two want to come out. That was my coming out. That was
okay. Is this what we're doing? I have generalized anxiety and depression, and I've been going to therapy now for almost 6 months, and am starting taking medication to help with those issues. And I have anxiety attacks, and I have depressive episodes, and I have really, really bad days where I don't want to get out of bed, but also feel super, super anxious because I'm not getting out of bed and have anxiety attacks because I'm not being productive enough because of my depression. And I have felt this way for as long as I can remember, but it wasn't until this year that I felt like I could tell someone. It felt like it was something that I was worthy of getting help for and that my problems deserved help. So that's my coming out, I guess.
Oh, I also have that fun, horrible tag team. They love to work
they
together.
They love to work together.
They really
anxiety
do.
Depression.
No, it's really true, though. I mean, in my clinical experience, a lot of people have both. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we got that in common, sis.
Yeah,
yeah. And I've struggled with I mean self harm, suicidal ideations. I'm in a good spot, but I never want to say I used to. It's like I don't. That's presumptuous of me. I'm treating it actively, but yeah. And good old body dysmorphia. Hey, that one could go away, but it doesn't.
Yeah. And, I love both of you. And I'm here for both of you as your sister. That's me, Riley.
I love you both, too.
I love you both, too.
Wow. How touching.
Well,
okay.
It was very touching. I was just remarking on the tenderness of this moment.
We also sometimes have trouble with emotions.
We do.
All of us here.
That's why whenever you find out somebody else does any sort of comedy related thing, I'm like, oh, this is somebody I can talk about my mental illness.
Yeah, exactly.
I know why you made that joke. I get it.
I get it.
Yeah. I've been there.
Yep.
So thank you, listeners. And we really do. We encourage you to take care of yourselves. And if you are struggling or thinking I might need help, but I'm not sure, reach out. That's usually a good indication that you should at least talk to somebody about it. And it can start with family and friends. It can go from there to talk with your doctor, talk with your psychiatrist, your therapist, your counselor, whoever. Reach out, get help. There's no shame. There's no reason not to. And there's no reason that you deserve not to live the happiest life you can mm-hmm. starting right away, as soon as possible.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to wait. And thank you to Maximum Fun for hosting our show and allowing us to be part of this network. There are a lot of other great people on Max Fun who will say the same thing and do loudly and for sure. Often on their podcast and on Twitter. So check them out. And you can tweet at us at StillBuff. That's the thing I was going to say. And you can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org. And we will be in Brooklyn next week.
Yes, we will.
Yay, with me. I'm in Brooklyn now.
Taylor's already in Brooklyn, always in Brooklyn.
I'm always in Brooklyn.
I'll be there in like 6 days. Sydney will be there in like 5 days.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And we're opening, what day are we opening?
That's what I was...
Is it Friday?
Either the 18th or the 19th. This Friday, there's a show on Friday and Saturday.
We're going to be there on Saturday,
the 19th.
October
18th.
19th. That's the Saturday.
Worst.
Correct?
Yes. Saturday the 19th.
Is it Saturday?
Still Buffering will be opening for My Brother and Me in Brooklyn. There are still tickets available for that show.
Yes. Just go to the McElroy.family.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way to find out our tour schedule and for all the tour schedules and then to see all the shows and where they are and all that kind of stuff. But go, if you want to see us opening for My Brother and Me, you should get tickets.
Yes.
We'll be at the King's Theater. Had to double check.
Yes. In Brooklyn.
Yes.
That's the one.
All right. And thank you to the Novellas for a theme song, Baby Changed Mine.
This has been Still Buffering, a sister's guide to teens through the ages. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am a teenager.
And I was
two. Why did our voices get so low at the end of that?
Two. Very two. Low. I was trying to like catch you say it, and then that's just the reaction. I don't know.
Okay. I thought it was spooky.
Two. Oh, was that? It's October. It's spooky ending. Arby's.
Arby's.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.
Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
It's a podcast that we do as we are married. And how's the ad going so far? Because I think it's going very good.
We talk about things we like every week on Wednesdays.
One time Rachel talked about pumpernickel bread. It was so tight. You cannot afford to miss her talking about this sweet brown bread.
We also talk about music and poems and, you know, weather.
There was one... Weather? One time Rachel talked about Baby Beluga, this song, for like 14 minutes. And it just really blew my hair back.
So check us out on MaximumFun.org.
It's a cool podcast with chill vibes. Amber is the color of our energy, is what all the iTunes reviews say.
They will now.